Hello, and welcome to another episode of the PE Risks podcast. I'm Christina Rice, an associate in the PE team based in our London office, your host for this episode. This episode focuses on strategic sourcing and commercial contracts with Zayed Al-Jamil, a partner in the London Tech Digital Group who specialises in strategic contracts, and Megan O'Riordan, head of the US Tech Digital Practice based in our Washington office. We've brought them here today to have a discussion about PE firms' focus on operations value creation. They have each worked with PE firms and their portfolio companies on outsourcing and complex contracting initiatives that have as the ultimate goal value creation. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing more about their insights. So let's get started with you, Megan. What is operations value creation for PE, and how does it relate to outsourcing and complex contracting?
Hi, Christina. We're all aware that PE firms' primary objective is to transform and run their portfolio companies efficiently, which ultimately creates value that can be realized upon exit. And outsourcing and complex contracting initiatives with third parties to improve operations are an integral part of those efforts. Most of these value-creating transformational and cost-cutting initiatives involve working with expert third-party providers or procuring and licensing sophisticated technologies. So this means that when PE and their portfolio companies are looking at ways to create value through operational initiatives, that's going to ultimately require some form of sophisticated commercial or outsourcing arrangement. And by that, I'm not just referring to the legal terms and conditions, but also it means agreeing to a rigorous and well-defined set of requirements for the service or technology to be procured. And that can include, amongst many other things, detailed commitments around performance, ensuring technical compatibility, outlining transition and migration strategies to deploy the service, and perhaps the one that receives the most attention, having in place a sound fee or pricing structure. Mm. All of these must align with the PE firm and portfolio company's longer-term business case around what value is ultimately expected to be realized by executing the arrangement. So, it's really about making sure the solution to be delivered from the third party is guaranteed as much as possible to align with the PE firm and its value creation objectives.
That's really interesting. And as a follow-up question to that description, Zayed, why do you think PE firms and portfolio companies should look to their legal advisors for value creation and support? This seems like it might be an activity that's better suited for management consultants.
Hi, Christina. To be a bit cheeky, I'd answer that by saying lawyers are the best at everything they do, and there's nothing we can't do, so no need for anyone else to be involved. But the truth is that everyone plays a different and equally important part in a value creation chain, including lawyers and including management consultants and others. Management consultants and accountants are fantastic at what they do best, coming up with visions for how a business can be rewired, where savings can be made, spotting new potential revenue opportunities, and so on. But to realise these visions, you need to put them into practice. You often need a very bespoke contract to implement new types of relationships, new structures, new ways of working, and new business risks that you may not even have thought of. And that's where the legal experts really come in. It's our job to think through exactly how this relationship is supposed to work, where the risks are, and how to deal with that. And also to make sure that all the benefits you think you will get will be locked into the contract. Our job is really to peel the onion and force people to think about issues that are vital to the success of the project at a detailed level, and to make sure that the contracts are genuinely fit for purpose in doing that. I can just say this. We always come up with things that no one else has thought of when structuring these types of arrangements. And then, of course, it's all very well saying that you create value, but that value must be realized, which means that you always need to be cognizant of the life cycle of a portfolio company and keep exit front of mind. That's something I think lawyers do really well. On exit, the portco's material contracts will be subjected to a lot of scrutiny by the buyer's lawyers. So stress testing those contracts up front helps realise that value on exit.
A question for both of you. What do you think are some of the material risks for PE firms and their portfolio companies who are using these third parties as an integral part of their operations value creation? Christina, I can take that first. There is always the potential for material and very significant legal and commercial risk if the outsourcing arrangement isn't put through a rigorous upfront process. But I suppose if I was to pick just one legal risk in today's climate that stands above all the others, it would relate to cybersecurity. Not appropriately aligning the cyber exposure in the contemplated arrangement with the regulatory and liability-related terms can create a significant amount of exposure later on. And that's independent of the legal jurisdiction or geography in which the deal is contemplated to either be executed or the services are to be used. Now, from a commercial standpoint, not setting up the relationship in a manner that incentivizes ongoing good behavior from the service provider is also a material risk. It's really economics 101. If you could end up in a situation where the service provider is actually better off underperforming versus hitting the performance targets that are set out in the arrangement. Poorly crafted service levels with ill thought out penalty structures are just one way in which I've seen that manifest.
I'll just pick up on that quickly, Megan, because I agree with the first point that you've made, that I think, in a word, there's no business without risk, and every contractual relationship comes with typical risk, some of the ones that you've already identified, like underperformance and so on. The biggest regret I've actually seen, and always after the fact, is when people realize they ended up with an inadequate contract because they thought everything would work out okay and didn't want to spend the right amount of time and focus on getting the contracts right when they should have. And the kicker for me is people only reach for contracts when they really need them. In other words, when things are already going off the rails. So if your contract isn't robust at that point, you're in real trouble, and the thing that should have saved you won't. And for PE firms specifically, I'd also say that the focus should not just be on value creation. It's not just a financial exercise, but it should be on making sure the contract is genuinely fit for purpose for the portfolio company. These are genuinely business critical contracts, and they must work operationally first and foremost.
Those are really great points. Thank you both. Very often, sophisticated customer contracting is critical to the day-to-day revenue generation of the portfolio company. What are ways in which you two have seen value creation initiatives be successful or unsuccessful in that context?
Christina, this is actually one of my favorite areas to dive in deep with our clients, because running effective revenue-facing contracting cycles, this is where selling a product or service is core to the portfolio company's business, is equally important as having strong agreements with your back office providers. I've actually seen some instances where companies fall into the trap of approaching their sales cycle with the idea that a faster, quicker, or easier contracting experience with their customers, and therefore not digging in on risky points, is ultimately adopted. While that may result in more sales contracts in the nearer term, what it actually does is create exposure to material risks later on. And this can include upon exit, when those contracts ultimately get diligenced and the buyer realizes there's too much latent risk in the revenue streams of the company. Or along the same lines, an incident arises with one of those customers prior to exit, and the agreement that was entered into is ultimately not fit for purpose and exposes the portfolio company to liability. It seems obvious, but faster, quicker, and a higher volume of near-term executed revenue-generating contracts isn't necessarily always better. Now, in terms of a more preferable approach, I often work with customers looking at their sales contracting more efficiently, where we devise a systematic approach of understanding the 5 to 7 core risks in their revenue-generating contracts and focusing negotiations on those versus the other noise that can distract negotiations and sometimes create a less customer-friendly experience.
That approach definitely sounds sensible. And as we know, each portfolio company's needs are different. So with that in mind, Syed, how can PE firms standardize value creation initiatives across portfolio company operations, and in doing so, potentially minimize some of the risks of failed transformation engagements?
Right. So, Christina, that's one of the holy grails people have been chasing for a very long time. And they've been toying with this idea that if you can leverage the buying power of a large part of the portfolio, you must by definition be able to realize value in different ways. For example, better pricing because of volumes that an individual portfolio can only dream of, more focus on senior stakeholder oversight from your counterparty, better delivery terms, and so on. But the first challenge is really to find the things that have application across as much of the portfolio or a segment of the portfolio as possible, and to get alignment from those portfolio companies on their requirements. And that's often more difficult than you would think, because companies tend to have a mindset that their unique ways of doing things and their unique requirements set them apart. So why would they change? But I think the answer is actually embedded in your question, standardization. If you take a step back, standardization is one of the key tools that a multinational, for example, would use to take the benefit of scale. So why would a portfolio of PE-backed companies be any different? You have to really force people to consider why they are so focused on differentiation when standardization has so much benefit. And when you overcome this challenge, the upsides are significant for everyone. There are some very good examples out there, including ones where we've helped some of our PE clients herd the cats in a way and drive standardization to minimize execution risk. And these provide significant value creation for everyone, portfolio companies, as well as ultimately the PE house in terms of valuation.
That's really interesting. And Megan, what are your thoughts about how current market conditions are impacting PE firm behaviors related to operational value creation?
That's a great question, Christina. It's a fairly common understanding that today PE firms are holding portfolio companies for longer periods of time. And this means that there needs to be a greater emphasis on running the day-to-day business in an efficient and sustainable manner. And it also means that PE needs to deploy strategies that preserve the operational value once it has been created. So thinking about things like the extension terms and sourcing agreements that are critical to operations, and then locking those in place when you're entering into the agreement, are receiving heightened attention. Another important impact based on market conditions today is that PE and portfolio companies can now start to consider engaging in transformational initiatives with much longer timeframes to create value in the long run versus potential short-term wins. Very often we see that the bulk of savings and return on very large and complex transformational initiatives are not realized until the out years. And that means sometimes 5+ years out from when the engagement is initiated.
And given those conditions, Zayed, are there specific types of deals or initiatives that your clients are either asking about or executing most frequently now?
There are quite a few trends, but if I just focus on a few that really come to mind, the first is the move to common platforms. These projects really can liberate companies and balance sheet from very expensive technology that always seems to be just slightly ahead of the obsolescence curve. And it gives them access to what I would loosely describe as subscription-based hosting technology that will always remain current, will continue to deliver new functionality at a low real incremental cost, will be easy to use and operate, etc. But they also create new risks at the same time, especially with respect to data and cyber, because your data is now hosted by somebody else, and there's exit and insolvency risk, which is typical for these types of transactions. So the upside comes with some risk that you really will need to manage. Another very good example is the adoption of AI and the exploitation of data. So literally everyone is looking at how AI can improve operations, save costs, give them a leg up and against their competition, and how they can monetize pools of data that they didn't even know they had. But these are new technologies, often third-party delivered, very often untested, and things can go very wrong as well. So you really need to understand what these new risks are and how to deal with them. And often that's not just pushing all the risk over to your third-party vendor, because they'll not accept unlimited liability for their efforts. But it's how you can deal with the potential risks within the organization and look beyond the contract as well. So that's an area that we work very closely with our clients on.
It's definitely going to be really interesting to see how these develop. Zayed, Megan, thank you both so much for your insights. You've definitely given us a lot to think about. And to our listeners, please don't hesitate to reach out to us or visit the Clifford Chance website for more information. That concludes another episode of the Clifford Chance PE Risks podcast.